we go!
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicado.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about food, travel, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Perth.
And I'm Monique Chicado, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and today I'm coming to you from my lovely stateroom aboard the Windstar Cruises Windsurf in the south of France.
In the south of France. Very glamorous. And what's this trip that you're, who are you on assignment for? And give us a quick rundown of where you're going.
It's a 7-day cruise from Barcelona to Rome, all the way through the south of France. And I am writing it up for Escape at the moment. So
fabulous. Yeah, the life of a travel writer. What's the ship like? What's the boat like?
It's actually like a hybrid between a cruise ship and a yacht. So it's got big sails on it.
Wow.
Yeah. And they unfurl them every time you leave port. It's actually supposed to be really windy today. So hopefully we'll actually get to do a bit of sailing. But yeah, it's beautiful. It's not like one of those big Ovation of the Seas or anything like that. It feels very traditional, like maritime kind of in the rooms. I've got portholes for windows. It's very cool.
Oh, very cute. Well, the end of a triple header with the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix with an amazing race result. Oscar Piastri taking lead of the Drivers' Championship, crossing the line first, holding off a very cranky Max Verstappen, which we'll get to. But just before we unpack this Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, I just want to give a shout out to you and me and this podcast, and also to our mutual friend, Tess Moon, who messaged me to say that she came across a statistic that said only 1% of podcasts make it past 21 episodes, and we're at episode 23. So we're in the top 1% of all podcasts around the world.
Woohoo! Go us, and that's amazing. That's 23 episodes worth of Formula One content, not 23 episodes of race, but this week is race content. This week's exciting race content because, again, Oscar Piastri won.
Yes, it was so exciting. He qualified in second place behind Max Verstappen by 1/100th of a second. Let's just think about that. 1/100th of a second behind Max Verstappen. So that he was on the front row. He will just quickly the grid. So behind Oscar Piastri was George Russell in the Mercedes in third, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari in fourth. In fifth was Kimi Antonelli in the Mercedes, great for the youngster, 18-year-old rookie. In sixth was Carlos Sainz in the Williams. In seventh was Lewis Hamilton in the Ferrari. Eighth, Yuki Tsunoda. Ninth, Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. And 10th, Lando Norris in the McLaren. And he qualified 10th because he had a crash in Q3. He spun out. Yeah. Hit the wall, didn't get to bank a lap before that happened, and started in 10th.
This is something that he's prone to doing, though, right? He is not, and he admits it, he's not the best under pressure. He lets things get to him. He's not cool, calm, and collected like his teammate. He chokes. He totally chokes when it comes to the pressure. And you said Max was only 1/100th of a second ahead of Oscar Piastri, which means the grid was so tight and the margins were so small, which obviously then puts the pressure on Norris like you wouldn't believe. And he just, he cooks it. He absolutely cooks it. For lack of better words, he can't pull through. He's not been that great in qualifying a few times because of that.
And I feel like this is a big difference between Lando Norris, who is in his sixth year of Formula One. This is Oscar Piastri's third season. This is his 51st race in Formula One.
Yeah.
And he's leading the world championship at the moment. And let's not forget how he started the season in Australia, like spinning out onto the grass, having to recover that awful wet, almost flooded race. Those conditions were just horrendous with the rain in Melbourne. He spun out onto the grass. He had to put the car in reverse to try and get some grip, and he rejoined the race and ended up finishing I think it was ninth, wasn't it, in Australia?
He was in points. Yeah, he was in points. And, you know, dare I say, had that have been Norris spinning out like that, I don't think Norris would have had the head and the mental stamina to be able to get himself out of that pickle like Piastri did. I just think he would have got too flustered. I mean, all props to him for being open and honest about the way that he handles pressure or doesn't handle pressure, because it's good to speak about these things, but it is very obvious that he struggles with that. And I don't think he would have been able to do what Piastri's done. And then there is a reason that Piastri has qualified in second, 1/100th of a second behind Verstappen, and managed to keep his cool and take the win in this race. We could bang on all day about how good Piastri's mindset is in this. But
yes, indulge us Australians. We haven't had a driver leading the World Drivers' Championship since 2010, when Mark Webber, Oscar's manager, was leading the championship. And we haven't had a world champion since 1980, since Alan Jones. I said it's his year, and God, let's hope this momentum can keep going for Oscar. It's brilliant to see.
It's really hard not to be on the Piastri train right now. When everything's lining up for him, he's got a fast car. He's got the head on him. He's a great driver. He's going to have McLaren behind him now. I think they're going to have to start thinking about their driver preference strategy, because
yes,
you can't not back the guy that's at the top of the Drivers' Championship. You can't not back the guy that is fighting Max Verstappen. That first corner of the race,
yes,
Verstappen got his elbows out. Verstappen plays the game. He got his elbows out, and he was so ready to make sure that no matter what happened, he was not giving up that first place. But Oscar Piastri didn't cede. He did not let Max rattle him. And what happened?
Max got a 5-second penalty. But Max was also, I don't want to say cheating, but it was a strategy. Oscar was ahead in that corner. Oscar had the corner, and Max went over the chicane, the cut through area, and went ahead of Oscar and gained a track position advantage. And instead of giving the position back, because he thought he was in the right, you know, they're both on the team radio straight away. Max saying he didn't leave me space. Oscar saying I was in the corner first. Max ended up getting a 5-second penalty, and he lost the race by 2.8 seconds. Well, lost. He came second to Oscar by 2.8 seconds. So had he not had that 5-second penalty, if he'd given that place back straight away, what would the race result have been? Maybe, you know, Austin's got a faster car, but, you know, Max was angry, wasn't he? He was driving like angry Max. And angry Max is a fast Max, isn't he?
He's a very aggressive driver when he gets when he gets angry. And I just find it really, really interesting. Max has a pattern of doing this, of getting straight on the radio and pointing out everyone else's faults or pointing out where he thinks he's right. And, I mean, we saw it last week when he was like, Norris is over his box at the start of the race.
It's a little dobber. I mean, that is not the Australian way, but it's Formula One.
It's,
you know, you've got to take every single advantage you can possibly get. And I think Max thinks that he can get an advantage by doing that sometimes.
Absolutely. And this year he's threatened by Norris. He's threatened by Piastri. He's threatened by Russell, Antonelli, Leclerc. He's threatened by all these guys. He's doing whatever he can to put himself in a better position and maybe put the other drivers into a less good position.
When Max has done that to other drivers, they've conceded. And Norris has done that in the past. He's had to back out of corners because Max is overtaking and Max is elbows out. And Norris has been on the radio saying, this guy is dangerous, and they're friends off the track. It just goes to show Max's driving style. Maybe this is why he's a four-time world champion. Did you see Oscar's overtake of Hamilton? I mean, that was like,
oh my gosh, yes.
I mean, if he blinked, you would have missed it, because he just took Hamilton by surprise, just overtook him in a spot where Hamilton wasn't.
It was a weird spot.
It was, and he did it. And it was just a champion move.
And that move came because he knew that he needed to clear Hamilton to get further up the track away from Verstappen, who then was behind.
Fresher tyres,
So he knew that he needed to do that, which is why he chose that point. which is why he was buying a flash. He's got a very, very daring driving style. And I think there's a difference between daring and aggressive. There's a very big difference. It was just a class act all around, I think, for Piastri.
Yeah.
But we haven't even spoken about his teammate much.
Who?
Exactly. This is one of the other big stories of the weekend. Like we've said, in Q3, in qualifying, Norris hit the wall, which meant he qualified in 10th. So he had to fight his way back up, pick his way through, and he ended up finishing in 4th, which, considering where he started, is very, very impressive. But we've also got to give the Ferrari boys, Charles Leclerc, got to give him credit.
The first podium for Ferrari this season, besides the sprint race. Mm. So that this is brilliant news. So good to see the Ferraris competitive. Charles Leclerc was more competitive than Lewis Hamilton, who finished in 7th place. And Charles, you know, took the podium only just. Had there been 5 more laps, I think Norris would have overtaken. He was right behind Charles in the last lap. But he didn't. Podium for Ferrari. So that's just brilliant.
Yeah. Do you know what I find so admirable about that as well? Is I think it was about 31 or 32 laps that Leclerc did on the mediums. So he pulled such a long first stint on those mediums when everyone was coming in and pinning for the hards because the mediums were
starting to go.
But he just kept going and he still had pace. He was really, really good.
He's a tyre whisperer. It was late last year that he had really old tyres and they were starting to go and he just managed them to the, it was late last year.
I do remember that. So he did phenomenally well.
Phenomenally. So just running through the top 10 for the results for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Oscar Piastri.
Before we talk about anyone else.
Obviously first, Max Verstappen, the Red Bull second, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari third, Lando Norris in the McLaren, George Russell in Mercedes, and Kimi Antonelli, the 18-year-old rookie, in 6th place, also Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton in 7th for Ferrari, Carlos Sainz in the Williams in 8th, with his teammate Alex Albon in 9th, the Williams, we'll talk about them in a sec, and then rounding out the top 10 was Isaac Hadjar in Racing Bulls. Double points for William, dang.
Yeah, I think that was one of the stories of the day for me. Just A, to see double points for Williams, phenomenal, great, love that, love Williams' trajectory at the moment.
Yeah, but me too.
But to see the teamwork that went into getting this 8th and 9th position was just so great. The only reason that they held on to 8th and 9th and not 8th and 10th was because Science played the team game to a T. And he was instructed to keep the gap between him and Albon behind him below a second so that Albon could benefit from the DRS to keep Hadjar behind him, who also had DRS on him. So if they both have DRS, it obviously negates the benefits of DRS and you're racing kind of in normal conditions. So that was fabulous team strategy and team playing.
And fair play. Carlos is really showing that he's there for the team, for Williams, and it's just brilliant. But we've also got to talk about my cousin, Gabriel Bortoleto, 1T, not 2, who almost took out his manager in Fernando Alonso. That was so close. That was the closest near miss ever.
Lawson was trying to overtake, and then Fernando kind of had nowhere to go and had to come up the inside and almost got pushed into the barriers. It was probably like, not even a piece of Barilla spaghetti in between him and the, and the wall. How is that for sponsor placement?
Nice. This episode is not sponsored by Barilla yet.
No, but the Formula One is.
And also in lap one, we did have 2 DNFs with Yuki Tsunoda and Pierre Gasly, who took each other out. A racing incident after the first corner on lap one. That was a shame to see. And last year, Pierre Gasly, of course, was the only driver that didn't have a DNF.
Yeah. Or he didn't have any crashes. Yeah, I think it was. He completed every single race.
And unfortunately, that's happened already.
And Yuki was on for such a good weekend, qualifying in 8th. That's the first time that Red Bull has had both their cars in the top 10 since, I can't even remember what race it was last year, but it was a long time. And so for him to crash out first corner in that race where he was on for points. It's just so disheartening, especially when he's really, really taken to the challenge of the Red Bull car, like neither of his, you know, predecessors has. So it's kind of like the Daniel Ricciardo incident where, you know, he got back into the Racing Bulls car, the RB, and he'd only had two or three races and he had to show himself. And he had a crash trying to avoid Piastri and broke his hand. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's those things where you're like, oh, damn it, they were really on track to show what they could do and they've just had this letdown. I mean, at least you can get back in the car next week. Ricciardo couldn't, but it's just heartbreaking to see.
Because
there was just one other thing that this is such an awful thing to bring up, but it's a stat and, you know, we love stats. Diane loves her facts. But after this week's qualifying, Lance Stroll has now taken the crown of the person who has been eliminated in Q1 the most. So he has taken that crown off of Hülkenberg and he has now officially been eliminated more than anyone in Formula One history in Q1. Not a great title to hold.
No, worst qualifier ever in Formula One. That's not a great stat you want next to your name.
Stroll did say that he came out with a funny comment. He was like, well, give the McLaren boys a kick Sauber and they'd be eliminated the most in Q1, wouldn't they? So he was poking fun basically at, he's like, the car's not good. Like, our car's not good. Of course we're being eliminated, but it also, you know, he's not exactly the greatest driver.
Aston Martin, they're really looking forward to 2026 when the regulations will change, which is why this year, 2025, with the current car and the current regulations, is Oscar's year. They've got a good car. He's a talented driver, currently leading the World Drivers' Championship. He's just got to keep this trajectory going, keep this momentum going. And, oh, my God.
We have faith.
We do. We have faith. So the race was, we hit triple header in the Middle East, and this was the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. I haven't been to Saudi Arabia, but it is a country that fascinates me, mostly because I watched a film on a flight 10 years ago and it was called Girl with a Bike, which in the proper title is something like, I'm going to kill this pronunciation, I'm so sorry, like Wadja, spelled W-A-D-J-D-A, made by a female film director, Saudi Arabian female, which at the time she had to make this film in secret. Women weren't allowed to be film directors back then. And it was a beautiful story about this girl who really wanted a bike, and girls were forbidden from riding bikes in Saudi Arabia back then. It's the sort of movie, you know, when you watch a film that captivating and beautifully told, but also real life, so different to my life. It's just been one of those films I keep thinking about and thinking about and have thought about often. And I've told hundreds of people to go watch this film because it's just a fascinating insight into the culture in Saudi Arabia, albeit 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Which is interesting that you bring that up, because you saying that women weren't allowed to have bikes and stuff like that. Yeah, that was very true of Saudi Arabia. On this trip that I just did to Bahrain, there was a Saudi, well, a journalist from Saudi, so shout outs to Talha, and he was lovely. He was from Riyadh, and we had such wonderful chats, and he was talking about how much effort is being put into, A, changing these perceptions that Saudi Arabia is so restrictive and so controlling, and, you know, because I think for a lot of people, when you mention these countries, they tend to, their mind goes there. So not only are they trying to change those perceptions, they are opening up their country to allow people to come in and see, or as tourists, just how beautiful their country is and what the culture is actually like. We had wonderful chats. He was telling us how the younger generation now, you know, they don't want to do things the way that, you know, had been done 20 years ago. So lots of regulations are changing, and we've spoken before about women not being allowed to drive, which they are now. You know, this has changed in the last like 5-6 years. there's a big difference between, just like any country, you know, take Australia as an example as well. There's a really big difference between going to a capital city that's very modern and built up and it has global companies there to going to a country town or a village, right? So take, for example, Jeddah, where the race is. Just look at the race on the on telly and look at how modern that city looks, right?
It just looks amazing on TV, the race, just glowing at night under 350 gazillion billion trillion lights. I don't know how sustainable that is, but it looks incredible on television.
When it's like that and you've got all these modern businesses, you know, it's all built up. It's the culture is so different, right? So, of course, they're going to be a lot more welcoming. Of course, you can walk around and hold hands with your partner. Because no one's going to come up and tell you that you can't do that in a big modern city that's welcoming foreigners. It looks like an interesting place. Like we said, we haven't actually been there ourselves, but from talking to Talha and from going to, I mean, we've both been to other Middle Eastern countries and seen those countries firsthand and experienced just how welcoming and just how relaxed and safe everything feels. I mean, I don't know about you if you had the same experiences, but for me in Bahrain and in Qatar, I felt incredibly safe as a woman.
Look, I went to Egypt just months before the uprising in 2010, and I was traveling with a female friend and also a gay couple, guys. They had to pretend to not be gay. And the reason we traveled together, my friend said, it's very useful to have men around you in Egypt. And when we weren't with them, when my friend and I were just going out, walking on our own in Cairo or wherever, yes, I was dressed modestly. I was not showing excess flesh, baggy clothes, that kind of thing. And I still got hissed at, looked at, comments in Arabic. At one time, we had to go to the tourist police. So I think you just have to be street smart. You just have to be aware. And the way I cope with it in Egypt, I just didn't make eye contact with anyone. And if I didn't notice them staring at me, looking at me, then I didn't feel threatened. Nothing happened. We weren't approached. We didn't. There was only one time where we were in a situation where the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I thought this could escalate. We might not be safe. And we quickly got ourselves away from that situation and totally fine. It's just, all travel, that can happen anywhere, right? So
it can happen in Perth. I literally walk down the street in Perth and feel uncomfortable because I get whistled at or I get stared at or I get chased or someone is having a little bit of an episode of some sort and yelling and screaming and, you know, so it can happen anywhere.
But getting back to Saudi Arabia, they're building the Line project. It's a massive city. It's 170 kilometres long. So that's more than halfway from Perth to Margaret River, right? And it is a city designed to not have any roads or cars. It's literally like a long building or a long, narrow, that's why it's called the Line. And on both sides, it's mirrored. So as you're approaching it from a distance, you wouldn't even notice that it's there. It's surrounded by desert. It's high tech, supposed to be a sustainable city.
This just goes to show the lengths that Saudi Arabia is going to position themselves as a destination. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned the mirrored outside of the Line. There's the world's largest mirrored building is currently in Saudi Arabia. It's the Maraya Alula. So it's a concert hall. And you've probably seen it all over Instagram. Influencers love it. It is this giant mirrored concert hall in Alula. And Alula is itself, the town, city, region, is pushing so hard for tourists. And I think it was a sheikh. It was his land. And he was like, nope, we want tourists. We want them to come. So he's built this big mirrored building. So a banyan tree, Alula, there are some Gulf Airstream caravans set out in the desert there. There's another one, Our Habitats, Alula, and they're all luxury accommodation, like wild, beautiful accommodation. So you can't tell me that Saudi Arabia is not pushing for tourists.
Yeah.
And there's another one that will be opening up soon. And I know about this one because I was just with the son of the founder and owner of the Mantis Group. They've just opened up the Hawa Resort by Mantis on Hawa Island. And their second foray into the Middle East is in Saudi Arabia. This property is in the mountains, lush green mountains in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, right.
People would never, ever believe you if you told them that there were these lush green mountains in Saudi Arabia. I just think it's fascinating how much is going on in the tourism industry in Saudi.
I feel like it's like Dubai was maybe in the late 90s, early 2000s, mm-hmm. when Dubai was building, you know, all the palm projects and, you know, world's tallest building and those kind of projects to diversify, have another economic driver for the country away from crude oil.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone is interested in travel and traveling to the Middle East, our friend Belle Jackson, so she is the co-host of The World Awaits, and she is a specialist in the Middle East. This is her thing. She writes about it all the time. I'd suggest looking up her work.
Yeah, Belle Jackson. Her husband is Egyptian. And Belle Jackson, of course, was the one that invited me to be her plus one to the Australian Grand Prix into the Red Bull Energy Station.
Lots of connections there. But
yes.
Great time to bring her up in the Saudi Arabian episode.
She won a travel award year before last for a story that she wrote about Saudi Arabia. Belle Jackson, shout out to her. And food of the Middle East and of Saudi Arabia. Obviously, mate, you've been to Bahrain and you've just literally had, 25 hours at home and then turned around and you're on another press trip. So you haven't had a chance to cook a Saudi Arabian feast at home for the race, but you do know a little bit about Saudi Arabian food.
I do. As I mentioned, I had some wonderful conversations with Talha. He was just genuinely such a sweet man. And I was telling him how much I loved the kabsa kabsa makbus. They kind of like cross over a little bit or a lot. And I was telling him how much I loved it. And he was like, you have to come to Saudi Arabia and try our makbus or our kabsa. From what he was saying, they're traditional kabsa is quite different. So instead of using a tomato base in their kabsa, they use just the stock from whatever meat it is that they're serving it with. And then obviously all the cardamom and cinnamon and cloves and stuff like that. So it's not as rich and red. It's that red as a flavor now. But it's, yeah, so it's just a different style.
I'm going to jump in and say a kabsa is it's essentially a meat and rice dish, like a fragrant, spicy meat and rice Middle Eastern dish. And every region, every different country has their own kind of variation of this dish.
You can kind of think of it like a Middle Eastern biryani or something, or biryani, however you say it.
Or paella.
I was just about to say a paella. It's, you know, it's that mix of spice and rice and whatever protein you have. They do like to use camel, which I would be very interested in trying. I've had camel before, but sorry to gross you out.
I have had camel before. I've had lots of different things before, but I am vegetarian now and have been for the last 14 months. So no, camel is not on my menu ever again. The next Grand Prix, we've got a week off racing. So we've got a break this weekend. We've got a special guest episode for you next week where we chat to someone who's very experienced in Formula One, who's got lots of fascinating insight and story. So be sure to tune into that. Then the following week is Miami. So in Miami.
Ooh, yeah.
So Mon, who are your predictions for Miami? Top three.
Look, it's so hard to not be on the Piastri train right now. So it's really hard to not say that he's going to come in pole and take the top step on the podium. But I'm not going to discount Max Verstappen because I'm pretty sure he's really good around this track and he's angry, he's hungry, he's got his fighting pants on because he's not at the top of the championship this year. He knows that he can push that car. So I reckon it's going to be between Piastri and Verstappen. And then it's really, really hard to say who's going to be on that top step because there's like not 0.1 0.10 seconds is not a time. And that is, that's at the margin between these guys a lot of the time. So who the hell is that? I don't know, Di. I don't know.
I'm on the Oscar train as well. So I'm putting Oscar for first. In second place, I'm going for the Ferrari. I feel like Charles Leclerc is feeling good. He was really positive after the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
He's clicked in.
He's clicked in. I'm biased. I'm owning it. So I'm cheering for the Australian. Yes, first and foremost, Ferrari. Second, yes, Charles Leclerc. And in third place, I think Angry Max will take third.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's just really, really hard between there's about eight drivers at the moment that could be up there between the two McLaren, two Red Bull, two Mercedes, and two Ferrari, of course. There's just it could be anyone. They're great cars, and 0.10 is not a margin.
And teams like the Williams are on the up. And then you've got, young talent like Kimi Antonelli, of course, is driving for Mercedes. So he might take a surprise podium. Ollie Bearman is a talented young driver in Haas. So you're right. It's really.
Hadjar.
But I mean, well, yeah. Hadjar, he's got a point to prove and he's still pushing every race. And this is why we love Formula One and what a great season that it is. So close. Bring it on.
It's not just cars driving around in a circle. That's NASCAR. This is Formula One. Formula One is exciting. It's amazing. There's strategy. There's different tires. Oh my gosh. It's incredible. If anyone ever tells you that it's just cars driving around in a circle, you tell them no.
Yeah.
No. Naughty. Next week could be anything, right, Di? Thank you so much for listening, guys. If you liked what you heard, please, please, please leave us a rating and a review on any of your favorite podcast listening apps. You can also have a conversation with us via email at andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com. Or if you like to keep it short and sweet and just do a little double tap somewhere, add a little like, you can find us on all your social media apps. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok.
Thank you so much, Mon. It was really fun, a great race, and the end of a great triple header, and so good to be signing off with Oscar Piastri leading the World Drivers' Championship. And thank you guys for having us in your ears. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato.
Let's do it.